Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. To Chicago, Jackson Park, 551 and a half acres, located on the south side of Chicago, Illinois. Originally designed 1871 by the very famous Frederick Law Olmsted and his colleague Calvert Vaugh. Greatly remodeled in 1893 to serve as the site of the world's Columbian expedition. That Jackson Park. I welcome Richard Epstein. Professor Richard Epstein is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at the University of Chicago and NYU. And most recently, he has published with a colleague a column in the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal apprising us of the plans for the building of a very large facility, the Obama Presidential Center, in Jackson Park, a construction that the professor and his colleagues oppose. Professor, a very good evening to you. The first time I focused on what this means for the people of Chicago was when you told me that the trees were cut down. I thought, what trees? Now I'll ask it again. What trees, Richard, were cut down in Jackson Park? Good evening to you.
Yeah, well, this is something to be done on the installment plan. The first set of trees that were cut down basically in August 16th or so, about a year ago. And that was pursuant to an agreement which had been signed the previous weekend, in which what they had done is to transfer possession of the area for the Obama Presidential Center to the foundation. And they cut down about 300 or 400 trees, and they were gone in about 4 or 5 days. Just a huge apparatus. There are other trees that will have to be cut down in order to complete the road work and the rest of the center. There are a lot of different estimates associated with the trees, but it's probably going to be about another 700 or 800 trees that they'll have to cut down if we're unable to stop this particular project from going forward. The way in which this has been rationalized by the city and the Obama Foundation is for every tree they'll cut down, they'll put up another tree. But this is basically the equivalent of the argument saying that the West German mark and the East German mark in 1970 were of equivalent value. The trees that are cut down are old growth trees. They often have diameters 2 feet or more. The trees that they're going to put up, they're going to put up only after they finish the center, which is probably going to be 5, maybe even more years. And they're going to be saplings ranging from 2 to 4 inches. It turns out in the interim, you lose the cover. There are no places for migratory birds and local birds to nest and so forth. So by standard environmental rules, the cutting down of these trees would be a virtual veto of any project of this magnitude if there were an ability to locate the project elsewhere. And as we have constantly insisted, this is a superior site to the west of Washington Park in Chicago, further removed from the lakefront, further removed from the trees, further removed from the migratory birds, much more stable on the work table. And so far, the city and the Obama Center and the courts have not paid the slightest attention to the program that we put together. We're not talking about some abstract idea. We'll retain the services of an extraordinarily gifted architect, Graham Balcony. And what Graham did was design a master plan that we could use for that particular space. And the master plan that he designed was, in fact, awarded the AIA, that is the Architectural Association, prize for 2021 for master planning. And in fact, it is the difference between what the Obamas want to put up and what Graham designed. It's the difference between child play on the one hand and a master architect on the other. And there's just simply no comparison.
I want to pursue this presentation for two pieces of metaphor. One is underwater, physically underwater because of where it located in Chicago, and two is underwater financially. Let's start with what you cite in your Wall Street Journal piece right away. What about the water table? What about the lake? What is the risk here?
Well, Chicago is basically very low to the ground. Lake Michigan is very large. And there's a series of lagoons that connect to the lake, which are going to be within a couple of hundred feet of where that is. When I lived in Hyde Park, a good deal further away from the lake, you get a very heavy rain and the sewers would all start to back up. It is generally understood that it's very fragile. Well, the water table, you know, 7 feet under, you start having that. Now, this is a very tall building. It's three times the site height of the Museum of Science and Industry. And so it's going to have to put its foundations quite deep. And so there are two constant problems. One is you have a problem of making sure that those foundations are kept dry 24/7 because it's below the water table, not only for the tower, but also for the parking structure, and maybe even for the other buildings, you'll have some of a problem. And then there's the additional risk that if it should turn out there's a storm or a flood, you're going to have to deal with the two things simultaneously. And water incidents like that on Lake Michigan are very common. And so you could easily see once every 2 or 3 years that there's going to be a serious strain on the overall system. So when we say this thing is underwater, we mean quite literally, you're going to have to spend an enormous amount. We don't know whether the city's going to bear that cost or whether the foundation's going to bear that cost, but it's a cost that has to be borne. If you move over to Washington Park or just west of it, you know, much further from the lake, the water table is a good deal lower. The storm risk is going to disappear. And so the amount of protection that you have to give to make sure that the thing doesn't go underwater is a fraction of what it is on the other side. And there are all sorts of other advantages in terms of communications. And indeed, one of the problems about building right by the lake is you're in a cul-de-sac. And so what you have to do is you have to ferry in all of your customers, all of your deliveries and supplies, and all of your employees through the same door. And that makes it back and forth extremely difficult to run, which means you have to design a more complicated structure, which means, in fact, that you're going to put greater pressure, given the complexity of the structure, on the stuff associated with the water table. So what you do is you have a rare combination here of water risk on the one hand, massive tree destruction on the other hand, to put up a building which could be much more effectively located elsewhere and built at a lower cost, releasing funds for all the programmatic issues that the Obama Foundation is interested in running.
Now we come to the underwater metaphor for finances. You report the Obama Foundation just released its annual report and 990 tax forms for 2021. Together, they show that the Obama Presidential Center's financial foundations are as rickety as its physical ones. How so, Richard? And what is the guideline for any developer of a piece of property?
Okay, well, for the first thing, in effect, is if you're going to start to put up a piece of property on somebody else's land, and the city sort of, quote unquote, owns all the land in Jackson Park. What the person who's giving you the land wants assurances about is that the project is going to be built to completion and that it will not be abandoned somewhere along the way, leaving the owner of the property with a very unhappy task of deciding whether or not to finish this building or to wreck it up. And so what you do in a standard transaction is you require people to put into escrow the amount of monies that are required to do two things. One of them is to complete the particular building, and the other is to make sure that the upkeep, the maintenance, and the improvements are provided for by an endowment. And given what I just mentioned to you about the difficulties of the water and other kinds of problems, security for the president and so forth, the amount that you have to put in that fund by the statement that the foundation itself issued in 2020 would be $470 million. What the foundation did in June of 2021 is they set up the fund, and they put $1 million into it. And they said, well, we've now satisfied the fund, the endowment, because we created it. But when you talk about creating an endowment, it doesn't mean that you open up a body into which you can pour money. It doesn't mean a promise to raise money in the future. It means that you have the money in hand, which when coupled with interest will give you the amount of money you need to do this particular obligation. And that $470 million figure was from some time ago. We know that there's supply chain difficulties up and down the line. We know that there's inflation going on. If you assume that it started at $470 million, you're way over $500 million today. And so you have this puny stuff in there and no possibility of getting more money within the period. The second thing is you have to basically be able to fund the building. And the cost structure for the Obama Foundation has just been going straight up. It started at about $350 million. By the time we were talking about this transaction in March of 2021, they gave a number of $482 million. By the time we got to the summer of 2021, the figure for the building construction, the bricks and mortar, as it were, was now at $700 million. We've gone, of course, now another year since that particular time with the inflation and with the supply chain difficulty. So that $700 million figure is probably off by at least $100 million. So you add it up, and what you need to do is to show that they had in hand, as of the date of the closing of this transaction, that's what the contract called for, is something like $1.2 or $1.3 million in cash or pledges, really strong pledges, not just promises to raise money in the future. And what they did is they certified that the transactions were satisfied, even though they only had $1 million in the operating endowment fund. And what they claimed is that they had received, that's the word in the contract, $485 million as of March. And then what they said is they didn't keep it. They just gave it away. But they said all we had to do is to get the money. They didn't say we had to keep the money. But if you're talking about a security agreement, well, what's good taking money if it turns out you can't use it for that because you diverted it for something else? And then, as is typical in real estate transactions, you have to update your financials as of closing to make sure that events that happened between March and August are taken into account. Well, they never bothered to do the second situation at all. And so what they did is they transferred the property and cut down the trees. And as best I can figure out from their rather opaque financial reports, is that we're looking at a situation where the amount of cash that they have dedicated to the project is none, literally the $1 million, and the amount that they have available, i.e. money they could spend on that or spend on something else, maybe a couple hundred million dollars. And so they're $1 billion short.
You represent Protect Our Parks, a nonprofit. Yep. And earlier this year, 2022, your remarks before U.S. District Judge John Robert Blakey, I'm following your reporting in The Wall Street Journal, and the judge rebuffed all of these presentations you're making in the column, especially about the money. Why so, Richard?
One of the questions that you have to ask is, how do you superintend a transaction between the city and a private entity if you think the city is quite literally giving away the farm? And the theory that we presented, in so many words, was a theory which says that the city is a trustee, and there's ample authority in the case law which says that any citizen of Chicago, either on behalf of the city, that is a derivative right, or on its own individual, has a right to look at the books to see that the transactions are going to be legitimate. What happened is the defendant said that, you know, you can't sue in this case as though you were a beneficiary under the contract, because the contract in Clause 34 says we have no third-party beneficiary. Well, we knew that, and so we never did that theory. So we send in all our papers, and on the first page, we tell the theory that we're using and the theory that we're not using. And then within 24 hours of getting all of the papers, there was no oral argument, Judge Blakey says the only case that we brought was the one on the third-party beneficiary. We do not have standing to bring that. And since we don't have standing, it meant that we could not look at the books. But of course, you want to appeal that, but you can't get there because the rules are extremely arcane. But essentially, the basic rule in federal procedure is you're only allowed to go to an appellate court when there's been a final judgment entered against you on the entire case. The financial stuff that we're talking about here was one third of a very complicated case. There was an opinion by the Seventh Circuit, a dreadful opinion, I might ask, which says what you're talking about, the trees, really doesn't matter. So we're not going to give you a preliminary injunction, but we're not giving a final judgment against you. Then there was the question of whether or not they should have entered into this transaction at all, in which the city gave away at least $200 million worth of land value in exchange for $10 and a promise for them to build the center, which won't be finished. Well, hey, all these three things have to be completely done, and then Judge Blakey has to certify it. Well, right now, it's now 7 months, 8 months after this particular order was issued, and we're still sitting there trying to figure out how it is we could get an appeal. So when I saw the financials, and Michael Rackless agreed, we looked at them and said, look, there's no way we're going to get this to be done in a timely fashion if the thing could be bottled up, if there's going to be a long period for an appeal. And so the basic argument is it's an appeal to the public to demand that the city and the state open up the books so we can see whether they have the $1 billion, which they claim that, which they need to have, which just shows nowhere in any of their financial
And that's
reports.
Why you publish in the Wall Street Journal an op-ed about these complaints. However, we need to look to the future. You mentioned earlier that you have an alternative site and an alternative plan. So when we come back, Jackson Park is not acceptable for all the reasons Professor Epstein has just listed. What is a good spot for the Obama Presidential Center? I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Plan B made over-the-counter emergency contraception legal more than 20 years ago. It's a safe, effective backup birth control option that helps prevent pregnancy before it starts by temporarily delaying ovulation. Plan B is the number one OBGYN recommended brand and the only one that you can find at all major retailers in all 50 U.S. states. There's no minimum age requirement and you don't need an ID to buy it. You can order it through DoorDash and other major delivery platforms too. That's freedom to be. Use as directed.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Oh, hear that? That's the Spam brand singing you a love song. Spam. Sizzle, pork, and